Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everybody, and thank you for choosing the King George Radio Show for Monday, April 1, 2013. This is King George you're listening to. Tonight we'll be joined with J.J. Blackjack Brown and Billy Caputo, former WWE referee. In the meantime, let me bring our wrestling insider into the conversation, the one and only J.J. J.J., a good evening to you. How are you?
Hey, King. Great to be on King Jordan. Happy belated Easter to you and yours. We're a week away from the biggest show of the year, WrestleMania.
That's right. And before we get to that, let's start off with the bad news, the sad news, I should say, in the Flair family. Why don't you give it to the fans?
It was very sad news this weekend. We learned of Ric Flair's son, Reed Flair, 25 years old. He was reported, he died. And I don't even have the words to imagine what Ric Flair and his family is going through. I mean, he lost his son. I mean, Reed, I mean, there were tons of outpours from wrestlers, anyone and everyone in the wrestling community. If you've been touched by Ric Flair and his family, they've just been trying to give their support in this extremely difficult time. I mean, Ric Flair was, you know, was in training. He's been trying to become a wrestler, just like his dad. And, you know, 25 years old, he had a bright future ahead of him, and it's just very, very sad.
Yes, and when he was actually on the Nitro, back in, I believe, 99, and we will play that at one point in the show. That was Friday, and like you said, he was 25, Ric Flair's son. So did we learn how he died? Any other news on how he died? He was only 25, so couldn't have been anything.
As far as I know, there was nothing reported that there was no drugs at the scene. So I don't want to say it's good news, but at least we know that, you know, there was nothing shady going on. And I'm still not certain what was the cause of death. I think they're probably going to have to do an autopsy report to figure that out.
Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back right after this.
We take just a few extra minutes to make fast food great food. Roland Roaster, Emmons and Nostrand Avenues in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn.
Okay, JG, as we await legendary referee Phil Caputo, the wrestling world is waiting. How many matches we have confirmed for Sunday's WrestleMania?
There are 9 confirmed matches for WrestleMania that we know of. There should be a pre-show match, but, again, that won't be on the actual pay-per-view.
Okay, can you go over the matches?
Okay, first up we have Chris Jericho will be taking on, for the first time ever, Fandango. And it will be Fandango's first televised match in the WWE. His debut match will be at WrestleMania against Chris Jericho. Also on the card, we got Brodus Clay and Sweet T, who's formerly known as Tensai. They will be teaming up with the Funkadactyls, Naomi and Cameron, and they will be taking on the Rhodes Scholars, Cody Rhodes, Damian Sandow, teaming up with the Bella Twins, Nikki and Brie. Also, for the Intercontinental Championship, Wade Barrett will be defending his title against The Miz, which is actually like a battle of WWE films. Wade Barrett, who was starred in Dead Man Down, and The Miz, who was featured in Marine 3. and tag team titles will also be on the line. Team Hell No, Daniel Bryan and Kane, will be defending their tag titles against Dolph Ziggler, the tag team partner Big E Langston. This also marks Big E Langston's first televised match on the WWE, his debut match, again, at WrestleMania. Also, we have the big six-man tag between Shield, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns will be taking on the team of Sheamus, Randy Orton, and The Big Show. Then, of course, we have the no-holds-barred match with Triple H's career on the line. Triple H takes on Brock Lesnar in an ultimate sort of grudge match, a rematch of last year's SummerSlam. Also, we have The Undertaker defending his streak. He's 20-0, and he's looking 1-0 by taking on CM Punk. Also for the World Championship, we have Alberto Del Rio taking on Jack Swagger. And in the main event for the WWE Championship, we have The Rock taking on the 2013 Royal Rumble winner, John Cena.
Okay, now that you had some time to think about it, let's hear some of your predictions.
Well, I think if you start at the bottom of the card, you look at Chris Jericho versus Fandango.
Wait a second. Sorry to interrupt you. Let's bring into the conversation former WWE ref with the WWE, the one and only Bill Caputo. Billy, good evening. How are you, sir?
Good evening, King. It's a pleasure talking with you. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Yes,
and,
thank you.
Please call me Billy.
Sure, sure.
So was all my other relatives, but I was the only Billy in the family.
Billy, yes. We have our wrestling insider, JJ, who joins us also on King George Radio tonight.
Good evening, JJ.
Hey, thank you. Good to hear from you, Billy.
Thank you.
Billy, before we get into Bruno and other things, give us a little story about yourself.
Well, I started refereeing in 1975, September. 1975, my first bout was in Sunnyside Gardens in Queens, New York. It was my tryout. I didn't get paid. I refereed Kevin Sullivan against Manuel Soto. They liked the way I worked. I had a little bit of an imagination working with it. A couple of things maybe that they had never seen before, but it was like a natural thing to me. The wrestlers liked me. They went back. Gorilla Monsoon was the agent at the time. And
okay.
He was there, and they told him that Billy did a good job. They asked me if I could go on. That was on a Wednesday night. They asked me if I could be in New Jersey on Friday night. And not knowing that I needed a license and stuff, I went to the place that they said, and of course the commissioners were there, and I wound up paying $50 for a license and getting paid $25 to work the show. So it was a loss of $25 plus gas money, I guess, for the night. But once again, they liked the way I worked, and that was basically the beginning. And they liked me, and I got called to do different shows. They started sending me across the country back and forth. I had time. At the time, I was working for the city of New York for the Department of Transportation as an iron worker, and I had some free time built up. I had vacation time and annual leave, stuff like that. So I was able to travel a little bit, travel on the weekends and stuff, which they paid for. And I started to get like a little, a fan base. People, saw me pretty regularly. That's the idea, If they see you over and over again, okay, somebody's going to notice you, whether they like you or they don't like you, they're going to notice you. And thank God I was lucky enough that people liked me. And, people come up and talk to me and take a picture and everything like that. And it just started like the downhill snowball. Started rolling, and from, going across the United States, now they want me, okay, listen, can you go to England? Can you go to Ireland? Can you go to Italy? Can you go to different promoters and stuff across the country that saw me? And they were looking for somebody. I was young at the time. I was in a lot better shape than what I am now. A lot younger. I had long blonde hair, which is my natural color, which is my natural hair. And it just worked right into the show, and everybody was happy.
Wow. That's amazing.
And I retired in 2003 from refereeing.
10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Wow, Billy. So you have a lot of experience. Something for you, and we'll come back and talk about it on the other side. Take a listen to this, Bill.
Thank you.
Every time I go to the New York area, an older person will always come up to me and go, "Man, before your time, I used to watch Bruno Sammartino. Ah, he was amazing. He was great." So it's just fun to hear that. And that's how you know you're great.
He was completely dedicated to wrestling. He wasn't going to be satisfied to be second best.
He was special because he paid a dear price to be a wrestler and a dear price to be a champion.
In order to be on top, you have to be a winner. You have to be a top man.
Incredible star and someone who carried the championship with pride and honor.
And the fans go absolutely berserk.
He trained religiously and watched other wrestlers in the ring every opportunity he had.
Sammartino was big and hard. He was big in the gym.
Bruno Sammartino was my father's favorite performer, was his father's favorite performer. In an area of the country where he was meant to shine, he did just that.
He was truly a legend in New York.
When I look back at the fact that he packed Madison Square Garden year in and year out, I think that statement alone explains his greatness.
Bruno Sammartino was able to bridge the gap between the ethnicity of fans. You would have the Italian fans, the Puerto Rican fans, the Jewish fans, the Russian fans, all united behind this champion for almost a decade. And that truly makes Bruno Sammartino one of the greatest.
The history of this championship goes back over 40 years to 1963, when the original Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers, the man who invented the figure four leg lock and the atomic drop, won the newly created Worldwide Wrestling Federation Championship. Less than a month later, the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, in 48 seconds, lost the championship to a relative newcomer, Bruno Sammartino. Bruno held the championship for an amazing 7.5 years, which remains a record to this very day, until the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff, upset Bruno in January of 1971.
Okay, Billy, back to your close friend. What do you think when you hear reminiscing the great, the legendary, soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Bruno Sammartino?
Well, Bruno is an absolute tremendous person. As far as his wrestling, you know, and attraction and everything, that's well-known and well-documented and stuff. But unfortunately, you know, like with celebrities and stuff, you see them, and, you know, either you like them or you don't like them and stuff. You don't get to know them. You don't get the opportunity, you know, unless you were their neighbor or you know, you grew up with them and you get accessibility to them. In my job as a referee, I got to know different wrestlers because we did different shows. We did different tours that we were together. Bruno came on the scene and was out of the scene when I came on to be a referee. So the first time I met him, we were doing the tapings in Allentown, Pennsylvania and stuff, and I met him as the commentator. I was the referee, and he was the commentator and stuff. I never got to watch him wrestle other than old films of him and stuff, but I got to know him. I got to talk with him, and he was just an outstanding gentleman, different, the opinions in his mind were really thought out and stuff. He knew what he was talking about, at all levels, and he was just, an all-around nice guy and stuff. And it was just a coincidence later on when he started to make his comeback back into wrestling again. I didn't do him at Shea Stadium or anything, but I did a couple of his bouts all throughout in Madison Square Garden when he started to come back. And it was, oh my God, he had fought Ivan Koloff a number of times after he lost the title to Ivan. And most of the bouts were either went Ivan's way or they went into a draw. But Bruno never really took advantage of that and beat him substantially. But the night that they had their return bout at Madison Square Garden, almost 10 or 11 years later, then when Bruno lost it, that night Bruno won. And it was just as if it was like the night he won the championship from Buddy Rogers. The place was packed. Bruno's and Koloff's match was not the main event at the time. I believe Bob Backlund was the champion at the time. So he had the main event. But Bruno and Ivan Koloff billed as a return bout and almost like a co-feature. And the place went absolutely out of their minds, cheering and screaming. And it was Bruno Sammartino, the popularity of Bruno Sammartino all over again, that I think keeps his image in everybody's mind. You know, people that were there can talk later on. I saw Bruno Sammartino. I saw him wrestle. I saw him do this move. I seen him do a bear hug. I saw him do, a drop kick. You got to see Bruno Sammartino, and that image goes on in people's minds.
And let me bring this over to JJ. JJ, you have a question for the legendary Billy Caputo.
Thank you for that legendary status. That's I don't think my kids or my wife think of that, but thank you very much.
Yeah, Billy, you mentioned all the traveling you did, and you mentioned even going overseas. I mean, you must have hundreds of stories. I mean, what was traveling like? I mean, I always hear these stories of guys on the road, and, it can be very brutal. It's very,
Let me tell you, the good, the bad, the ugly, all that stuff, everything that you've heard is true. We've had our good moments. We've had our bad moments. We've had good promotions, bad promotions. Never once, though, was there any animosity among the boys, among the wrestlers themselves. I've traveled to the Philippines a number of times with Wendy Richter and Medusa Michelli, Jake Roberts. We've traveled to England through the promotion of, I forget the guy that used to work as the Sheik, and he brought his son in. I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, Everybody, we all did our job, we all knew our job, and it was terrific. So unfortunate, sometimes, when you work as a heel, the people get up on you about that, and you have, walking the streets. I remember in Singapore, it was Jake Roberts, they were promoting Jake Roberts against Diamond Dallas Page, and at the time, Jake Roberts was the babyface, Diamond Dallas Page was the heel. They're promoting that. We're doing a promo in the Singapore Zoo in Singapore, and it's very nice. It was one of the morning shows or something like that, and like a Regis and Kathy Lee or something like that. It was a morning show. Jake Roberts was on the show. I was on the show because they were promoting me as the referee. They brought me in from the United States, and Dallas Page comes in, and it was set up. It was the promotion that he would upset the interview and get the goat on Jake Roberts. And Jake Roberts had, one of the snakes from the zoo. He was using that as a prop. And in the scuffle and everything, the snake got tossed. The snake was in the bag, but they brought the snake out to let the people know it was there. They put the snake back in the bag. And during the scuffle and the promotion, the snake went flying. People were screaming. And everything turned out for the better for Jake Roberts and myself. We were the heroes, but we had to get a police, or at this time it was almost like the Singapore Army and security system, had to get Diamond Dallas Page out of there. And again, now that led to that night when we did the show in Singapore at the stadium. You just have to, you just have to be careful, when things like that happen. Good nights, everything is fine. People are happy. The baby faces win, the heels lose. It depends on the promotion and what you're doing. If you're setting something up, if you're coming back, you're coming back the following week or the following month, and you want to set something up, most of the time then the heel is going to win to set up some kind of a grudge match for the next month. That's the promotion. That's the way it goes. People don't want to know that. The people want to see their hero win all the time, and that doesn't happen all the time.
Okay, Jay, do you have another question before I get to mine?
Yes. What do you see the difference in wrestling of before, like the Bruno Sammartino era, and then the wrestling of today? What would you say is the difference? Is it better? Is it worse? Has it changed dramatically?
Well, it modernizes itself, JJ. It's like anything. Do you say that the New York Yankees team of today is the exact same as the Yankees team of 1927? Of course, they're the Yankees, and they're going to win the World Champion, the World Series. And in 1927, 28, they win the World Series also. It's a different team. It's a different time. It's a different place. But I think the biggest change, of course, is the territories. When Bruno was wrestling, and before Bruno, everything was territorial. Vince McMahon Sr. had the East Coast, and the Shires had the West Coast and California. And, Eddie Graham's, the Grahams moved down to take over the Florida area. Vern Gagne had the Chicago, Mid-America area. Everybody was settled in their ways. But then, when the expansions went and Vince Jr. started working, realizing that there's money to be made all over the place, that's when the big change in, and that's when the animosity showed up. Again, you had the promoters fighting promoters. You're in my territory. I draw better than you, or my talent is better than yours. And that's where the problem comes up, and all that animosity, like I said, goes on to television, that's promoting their wrestling. It's on TV. It's brought out to the public, and it's basically, you want to go to their show, you want to go to our show, and remember, our show has been here for so many years, and it's nothing different. But the people want to see a different wrestler. People want to see anything. I remember, and I hate to keep bringing it up, but I know it's a special night, and you do want to talk about Bruno. The time that Vince Sr. lent Bruno to the West Coast for that big battle royal and a couple of matches that they were having out there. And it was the first time that anybody there had seen Bruno Sammartino, and not even any of the wrestlers there had ever seen or been on a card before with Bruno Sammartino. And he won their battle royal. He won their singles bouts. And it was just, it was his style of wrestling, not, the roughhouse, which later came about, between like the Fred Blassies and the Ray Stevens and the Pat Pattisons of the modern time, their roughhouse. It was Sammartino's roughhouse against them, and it was just the people got to see the big difference, and the people choose whether they like it or they don't like it. But as far as what's better or not, it's all good. It's all good.
Okay, Billy. We have the Hall of Fame that Bruno's going to be in, and that's great. But sad story, we were talking about earlier, actually Friday, when I did call you up. The son of Ric Flair, the legend, Reed Flair, passed away.
Yes, sir. Sorry to hear that.
When you first heard that.
When did I first hear it? When you called me to tell me. That was the first time I heard about it. And then on my computer, on the internet and stuff, different stories started popping up. And then, of course, fans and a lot of people that I know in the business called up. They wanted to know, they wanted to know how much I knew. And second of all, they wanted to know how to send their condolences to the Flair family. And, of course, you can't give that information out or anything like that. But I can pass it along, as we go along and stuff. I don't referee anymore, but I work for the New York State Athletic Commission as an inspector for professional wrestling and also for professional boxing. But I cover a lot of the professional wrestling shows throughout the state of New York. And I am doing a show, the TNA show, out in Westbury next Friday night. And I will offer my condolences and prayers and stuff to the Flair family, to the people that I know, you know, that do know him and are affiliated with him from TNA. I know he's now back with WWE, but there are some people there that are old friends of his.
Hopefully tonight they'll say something in regards to Ric Flair's son.
You hope what? I'm sorry?
Hopefully tonight on Raw, they'll say something in regards to RF's son passing.
They might. You never know. I know they've let a couple of things go by, and until people get after them and say, "Hey, you didn't say anything about this. You didn't say anything about this." But I'm sure they may say anything. I don't think Reed ever worked for the WWE. I know he was at a few shows. I did meet him a couple of times when I refereed down in Baltimore and in Virginia and in the Richmond, Virginia area. And I met him. And again, he was a lot younger then.
Nitro.
10 years ago. He was only like 12 years old or 15 years old when I met him.
He was on Nitro. He played a clip when he was 10 years old. So this is 15 years ago. This is when Eric Bischoff had some problems in the storyline with Ric Flair, and Reed comes out. So I'm going to play you this segment, and then we'll come back on the other side and we'll talk about it. Is that okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Down, Scott Hall, it's all...
Uh-oh.
He's got a headache. I bet he does have a headache.
He has problems, Bischoff! Well, if he don't have a headache, he should.
Well, let us say once again, Scott Hall's actions, Scott Hall's demeanor, Scott Hall's lifestyle is not condoned by WCW, the official, nor anyone associated with WCW for that less the NWO. He needs help. It wasn't pretty what we've seen, but it just goes to show you what the Wolfpack will do.
Just in case any of you were wondering, Hollywood is just fine.
I think Hollywood snapped, don't you think so?
But let me tell you
a
little story about a man named Flair. Don't boo him. At this stage in his career, he needs as much support as he can get. And believe me, every and any way, he can get it, if you know what I mean. But what I'd like to do for all of you, fans of the Night and Moa Ric Flair, who gather every morning at the Waffle House on Tuesday and complain about how bad I treat him, I want to apologize for Flair. He will not be here. Looked everywhere. The man is more of a coward than he is a fossil.
Lesson because this is Columbia and this is a horseman pen.
Oh, yeah.
The last time I was here, I gave these people some bad news.
It looks like we're having some technical problems, but the essence was Reed Flair was going to be in that segment, and if anybody wants to look that up, it's on YouTube. Simply type in Reed Flair segment in WCW. But that's definitely a shame, Bill, right?
Of course. Well, it's a shame certainly to the family. It's a shame for the fans of wrestling and of course, for the people that knew him and liked him. Evidently, he had a following. He was being promoted. He was giving a big push. I believe at the time of his death, he had a contract with New Japan Wrestling, so he's been doing some work over there. And it's a terrible loss. It's a terrible loss when you lose anybody in your family. And believe me, in the wrestling business, we're all a family. You know, you may like some of the wrestlers, you may hate some of the wrestlers, but in the long run, we're all family. We're all family together. We're all family to one another.
Okay, I believe we have a caller. Let's take it. Lisa Berman, 81, you're on the air. How are you? Lisa, you're on the air. You're free to talk. Okay, I guess they want to hold. So, but Billy, back to the Flair situation. That's such a tragedy to bury a son period, let alone 25 years. He's got to be grieving, right?
Of course. It's certainly an unfortunate happening. You know, like you said, you know, 25 years old, and it's your son, but, you know, it's nothing like, you know, if he was 26 or 28 or something like that. It's still your son, and you feel very bad about burying him, and I'm sure the family is upset, and, you know, and of course all his friends and family and, you know, and everybody in the wrestling business, you people that, you know, reporters and things like that, I'm sure you all have feelings and stuff. You all remember Ric Flair. You know, you watched him wrestle, you saw him do an interview. You know he had problems in the past. You know he overcame some of those problems. Now, whether he fell back on that, who knows, whether these are results of his previous encounters with problems, you don't know. But you do know the personality of the man through the wrestling business, and that's what makes us all brothers and all family. And so it's a tragic loss. It's a tragic loss for any buddy in the wrestling world to lose someone from the wrestling business.
Yes, totally. Now, what are your experiences? Well, let's get to that after. Since it is WrestleMania, which WrestleMania will you have the honor to be at?
I did the opening bouts for WrestleMania 1 and 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was the atmosphere like at WrestleMania 1?
Oh, it was absolutely tremendous. Security between Madison Square Garden, the New York City Police Department, and a lot of the celebrities had their own security, and this was all backstage and stuff, and really pretty much organized through Vince McMahon and his group of very competent people and the security that he had in keeping everybody in line, well aware of what's going on, of the timing of everything that was going on to bring on, you know, the many celebrities that, and if you remember WrestleMania 1, my God, you had Billy Martin as the ring announcer, you had Muhammad Ali as a special referee, Liberace did a show in the ring with the Rockettes, there was so much going on. And, of course, the main event with Hulk Hogan and Mr. T against Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff with Cowboy Bob Orton in their corner as the ace and Jimmy Snuka in Hulk Hogan's corner. And Mr. T, of course, all had his security all around him. At the time, he was, you know, very big on television and the movies and everything. So you had, you know, you had a conglomerate of mixed people. Billy Martin from baseball and Liberace the entertainment world, Muhammad Ali boxing. And you had all these different...
Cindy Lauper.
Yeah.
Okay, JJ, you have a question?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned being at WrestleMania 1 and at WrestleMania 10. I mean, what was the difference from WrestleMania 10? Did it feel like it became bigger? Did it? You feel that every WrestleMania has tried to top the previous one?
Oh, sure. You have to. You have to. You can't put the same show on, you know, year after year. You have to bring in the different main events. You have to bring in... what we call a little, you know, a different gimmick, bring in a different celebrity, you know, going back and forth. Remember one WrestleMania you brought in the sports guy that worked with Andre the Giant, you know, all, you know, different things. I can't think of his name. Oh, man, he's in the Major League movies and stuff. And, you know, you have to bring in, you know, you have to do something. You got to entice the people. Nobody's going to pay to see the same thing. Now, in difference to what I just said, now you have The Undertaker and his 20-year streak. That's unbelievable. And it's really something that the people, and it's going to be a draw for this WrestleMania to watch him and CM Punk working with that,
oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is something that's been going on. But again, that's not the whole show. This year's WrestleMania it's a tremendous variety of styles of wrestlers, champions, non-champions, people in their prime, people, you know, maybe we say coming out of their prime. It's a whole group. It's a whole, different venue of people.
I have a question. Billy, give me your opinion for the big main event coming up this Sunday. In one corner, we have The Rock defending his title against John Cena. Who do you like?
I like The Rock.
Really?
Rock is, as far as personalities and things go, you know, they're pretty much even. As far as athletic ability, I think I would go leaning a little bit more towards The Rock. He's a little bit leaner, a little bit looser. Yeah. John Cena, of course, is an absolute excellent showman and performer. The Rock, I think, is just a little bit smarter and a little bit quicker. And I do like I like The Rock in last year's WrestleMania, and he came through, and I like him again this year.
Okay, wow. We got an email question from Andy in Brooklyn wants to know, what was your biggest match that you refereed that comes to your mind right away?
Oh, well, there was a tournament that I did. They especially asked for me to go to Puerto Rico for the Carlos Colon Universal Wrestling formation that they had there. Victor Quiñones was their matchmaker. It was their booker. And he got in touch with me here in New York, and they flew me down, and I was there. I've been to Puerto Rico on a number of occasions, and they really liked me. It was a time when Carlos Colon lost his Universal title to Abdullah the Butcher, and they were having a two-week tournament of every major wrestler in the world. The Giant Baba was there from Japan. Ric Flair was there. At the time, I think Bob Backlund, they brought Bob Backlund down there. George Steele, they had brought in Ray Stevens from out west. They brought in the Funks, Dory Funk, Terry Funk from down south. There was a whole conglomerate. And in one particular time span in the 2 weeks, I got to work with and see and be friends with some of the major personalities in the wrestling world. And, of course, the highlight of that tournament was the final match, and it was an elimination tournament all throughout the week. You know, the final match was eventually Carlos Colon against Terry Funk. They had all beaten their prospective opponents and stuff like that. And that match went on for almost an hour there, and nonstop, back and forth. If you know the way Carlos Colon works, if you know the way Terry Funk works, both of them are not going to stop. Both of them are going to be a bloody mess. My shirt, people wanted my shirt after the match. They were, tearing it off me because it was just covered in blood, and they wanted a souvenir of it and stuff. I got away with, the back part of the shirt. The front part was ripped off. But that's one of the highlights. That's the one that comes to my mind. Because
Okay, I believe we have a caller on hold. Caller 347, you're on the air with Billy Computer. Question or comment?
Hello, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Question to ask you guys. You guys are missing one match that nobody's talked about.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The Alberto Del Rio versus Jack Swagger. What did you take on that match?
That's right. So you're talking about coming up this Sunday, right?
Yeah, you got the WWE on one side and you got the WWE on the other side. What's your take on that match?
JJ, let's throw that to you.
Well, I see this is they're trying to make this into a really big match between Del Rio and Swagger with politics and beliefs and America. They're making this a very big issue, and I was very surprised 2 weeks ago when Swagger was beating up Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez, and Swagger standing tall, and the fans are chanting USA. I was very surprised. It seemed like they were very pro-Jack Swagger and his America.
If I may, for one second, doesn't this seem like they try to do the same thing they did with Slaughter back in the late 90s when he turned with the two Iraqi guys, how he spit on the American flag and everything. I mean, it seems too, you know, coincidental what he's doing right now.
Oh, of course. I think we've always seen throughout time there's always that kind of nationality conflict and that sort of anti or pro-America. We've seen it earlier, maybe 10 years ago, when they had the anti-Americans with Lance Storm, William Regal, Christian, and they were kind of anti-American and they were very pro. We've seen that a lot through the history of wrestling. Like you said, going back to those days with Nikita Koloff and the Iron Sheik and things like that.
Okay, Billy, you're back with us.
I think we had a little technical difficulty. That's okay. That's all right.
Call, you have any questions for the referee?
Out of all your matches you've ever called, what match would you say you didn't want to do but you had to do it?
Okay, believe me, that's pretty easy. I did a match. It was a tag team match. It was Abdullah the Butcher teaming up with Kamala, and it was against Sabu and Terry Funk.
Wow.
Okay.
Now, why did you want to do it?
I knew the reputation of all four of these people. Anything was going to happen, and whatever I thought was going to happen, it actually happened.
Wow.
There was blood all over the place. There were chairs. There were anything. It was, of course they billed it as a no contest, no disqualifications, free for all brawl. And all four of them, nobody liked one another. They didn't like nobody liked either one of them. So they were just out. Forget the tag team rules. Forget everything. And the match went on. The match went on for almost like 45 minutes. And it was like they just cleared out the place themselves. It was an easy match to call because I didn't have to regulate rules or anything like that. Anything goes and no disqualification. But it was I didn't want to be in the middle.
Funny question for you.
An accident.
I guess your best friend is your chiropractor then, huh?
Mine, yeah. My brother is an orthopedic surgeon.
I guess your best friend is an orthopedic chiropractor.
There you go.
Okay, caller. What is your prediction for Sunday's WrestleMania main event with The Rock and Cena?
I'm hoping that Cena does win it, contradicting myself from your last meeting that you had on here. I'm hoping that John Cena does beat The Rock, only for someone to come alongside John Cena and beat him. Because I don't see anybody coming along and beating The Rock. It doesn't seem likely.
Excellent point.
But
okay.
I do see somebody coming around and beating John Cena. But I don't know if you guys know, but in 2 years, John Cena's contract with the WWE ends, so let's see what they do with him.
Wow.
Yeah, in 2 years, his contract ends. That's
he's
why RVD's gone from TNA. His contract is over.
That's right.
RVD's contract is over. Sting's contract is ending with TNA.
So, you got an excellent point, though, with Rob Van Dam. And do you think Swagger will take the title?
No.
Caller.
No.
No?
I don't think they've hyped it up enough for Swagger to take the title from Alberto Del Rio. I mean, Alberto Del Rio went from being a heel to a babyface overnight by winning the title. I think if they take the title from Alberto Del Rio, now it would almost be like the Titanic sinking. What support do they have behind them?
Well, Swagger
no support.
Is at WrestleMania. He's 2-0.
Yeah, but think about it this way. How did he become babyface? Because he won the title from the Big Show because nobody could do it. Now, if they have Jack Swagger, who is anti-American, well, he's pro-American, anti-immigrant, other than American, if they have someone like that beat Alberto Del Rio, I mean, that kind of puts a bad taste where he stands. Does he go back to being heel, or does he remain babyface? Keeping him with the title, at least it helps him stay as a babyface.
Okay, thanks for the call, callers. Interesting weekend, as always, Billy, as Vince gets ready for WrestleMania, right? Bill? Oh, Bill, okay, let's get Bill. We're having some technical. Billy?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes, with WrestleMania right around the corner, how big is it now, WWE? You know, they're really going over everything, especially for tonight's show, right? They're going to go all out to pump it up, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is their last big promo, of course, you know, WrestleMania being next week and everything. This is their last show. They have the SmackDown on Friday, which will be filmed tomorrow, Tuesday night. And, you know, they have their other, you know, their fill-in shows that they can always plug in, you know, the different commercial rights and stuff, the commercial advertisements for the upcoming matches. But as far as, you know, getting everything ready, I know the Meadowlands, I drove by there. As a matter of fact, the other day, I happened to be in Jersey traveling through Secaucus and stuff. And they're getting ready. A couple of the trucks are there. And,
wow.
You know, you just get the wiring ready, and you got to bring in the scenery and stuff like that. All the, you know, especially for a big show like this and the big production that the show is, it's not like they're regular television stuff where, you know, you have one truck that has one setup and you know exactly what that's going to do and how that, you know, gets set up and everything and who's doing that job. WrestleMania is something altogether different. There's a lot more security. There's a lot of more celebrities coming. You got to put up places for that. And, you know, the old locker rooms are just not the same. You're going to have to make available for everybody to keep everybody happy. As I said before, people come with their own entourages now, you know, and everybody wants to be happy.
Okay, 820, we have the money quid. Let's go to the callers. We have Elijah White, 90. You are on the air. Elijah. Okay, the call hung up. They got a little bit nervous probably. But, Billy,
yes.
The last time that you were at refereeing a match in New York for the WWE or WWF, was when? New York.
In New York, it was, for the WWE, was February of 2003.
Wow, okay. Do you remember the match?
Offhand, no, I don't.
I just want to say, you know, I did bring this up in 02 when I was reffing, I believe, for the first or second time. We were working with the FBI, and you helped me advance, if you will, by letting me come in and reverse the decision when it's something happened. I don't remember the whole story, but, you know, I always wanted to thank you for that.
Well, that's my pleasure. And you know, for the people that are involved with wrestling and want to promote it and want to keep it going and keep the popularity going, we try and do everything that we possibly can to work along with them and stuff. And the people that are negative about the wrestling, we want to sit down and explain it to them exactly what it's all about. And you know, we want to hear what you don't like about it or what you're doing. You know, oh, it's phony and they're not doing anything. You know, well, you know, we'll sit down and we'll show you exactly, yeah, what's phony, what's not phony. We'll go through everything. And, you know, any dissenters and stuff, we're more than willing to sit down with them. And, like I said, people like yourself that are pro wrestling and want to help it and advance it in any way, we'll try and do whatever we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And as being an inspector now, what is your exact duty for the fans?
For the fans, my exact duty is to try and protect them. There are different rules and regulations. Other people see them here, you know, they'll see it on the television and stuff. There has to be athletic mats around the ring to protect the wrestlers. There have to be protective railings completely around the ring that separates the wrestlers from the people, the audience. We don't want anybody else getting hurt or anything like that. I have to make sure that everybody in that's participating in the show is examined by a doctor. We have physicals. We have complete physicals. blood pressures and eyesights and reflex things before every show, all the wrestlers that are going to participate, and even the managers, valets, anybody that's going to be involved in that ring has to be examined by a doctor. We have to make sure that there are no drugs around, that no harmful steroids or anything like that is visibly present at any time. Power bars, all this other, you know, any kind of enhancements or anything like that isn't allowed around. I have to make sure that everybody involved in the show is over 18 years of age. I've had to ask for proof on a number of occasions. We do have a lot of independent shows, what they call, not the, you know, like the real organizational shows, you know, that have the big TV promotions. You have a lot of promotions that don't
without
have
giving
TV.
Without giving any names away, have you ever busted anybody for steroids?
For steroids? Not so
without
much
giving
for steroids.
Anybody.
Not so much for steroids, but for alcohol and drug abuse, yes.
So what happened?
Yeah, I stopped them from wrestling. I stopped them from that particular show, and they were brought up before the examining board of the athletic commission in Lower Manhattan, and they were told to clean their act or get out of New York. That they're not going to work. And unfortunately, they were so far, you know, they were too far gone. They couldn't be helped, and they've never wrestled in New York again.
Wow.
Yeah, it's on two occasions that it's happened. Unfortunately.
Okay, JJ, let's throw it to you.
Yeah, I was just wondering, Billy, with this year's WrestleMania outdoors, what do you think about that? You think it was a good idea or a bad idea to have it, you know, with no roof where anything could happen? It could rain, it could snow.
That's exactly the point, and it's a discomfort to the fans, the wrestlers themselves, the referees, of course, everybody around there. You know, the wrestlers don't care if it's raining on them. I've refereed in the pouring rain, you know, electrical storms. We've you know, taken cover for a little while, but you come back and you do it. There's no problem. The inconvenience is to all the fans, something like that. It's a crapshoot, you know, with hopefully that the weather, and it looks pretty good that the weather, you know, will be a nice day, a nice mild day, mild night anyway, you know, when it's going to happen. So they may be lucky this time. But, yeah, any kind of an outdoor show is really tricky.
Yeah, but it will be looking good from a TV standpoint, like football, right?
Of course. Especially, you know, something a little bit different. The only problem is, though, you know, if it's raining and if it's raining hard and stuff, the show will go on. But you'll see, you know, you'll see that the crowd, even though they paid their money, will be very scarce as far as the TV picture. You know, you'll see a few people scattered here and there with maybe in overcoats and raincoats and stuff like that, and umbrellas over, you know, that, you know, unfortunately blocks the vision and stuff like that. But the show goes on.
$70 to order WrestleMania in 8 states. Your thoughts on that?
The cable watch, yeah. Well, that's nice and safe. You're inside.
Thank you.
You'll definitely get it.
No, I'm talking in terms of the price of ordering it this Sunday. It's going to be $70 if you order HD, $60 if you order it non-HD. Your thoughts on the prices today overall?
No, that's comparable to everything, you know, with that. And again, for wrestling fans, WrestleMania is WrestleMania. There is nothing better than that. You know, there's nothing bigger. There's no bigger show and no bigger talent that's being produced and promoted in one particular venue. I'm not just saying, you know, the other, you know, if there was another organization as big as the WWE, TNA, of course, is second. We have, you know, a couple of other ones, you know, trying to come up, but nothing is as big as WWE. So, you know, it's their top talent. It's their men that they've been promoting since last year's WrestleMania. And, you know, and we'll see what happens. There's a lot of different and interesting matchups for this year. A lot of them that, you know, people are going to want to see and tune in about and you know, hope the best for their favorites to win.
What are your thoughts on poor Scott Hall?
Poor Scott Hall?
Yes.
What are my thoughts on him? Well, you know, unfortunately, he's addicted to a number of drugs that we try and, you know, and alcohol, drugs and alcohol, that has been affecting his life for a number of years. A lot of people, a lot of promotions have tried to get him help and everything. I haven't talked to him in a number of years. His old friend, Six Pack, I see him a lot. And, you know, we just mentioned, how's he doing? And, you know, you will get like a head turn or a shrug of the shoulder, like, you know, we're all trying to help him. You know, when he's got good days, bad days, but he doesn't have a steady day of good.
Yeah.
No question. And did you ever get a chance to ref any of his matches?
Oh, sure. Yeah. When he was breaking in, when he came over from the AWA and he was working a lot, and he came in with what's his name, Mr. Perfect, Henning.
Kurt Henning.
And yeah, they were tag team. Well, they were good friends. They were good friends in the AWA and stuff, and they came to the WWE together. I was still refereeing, and I got the opportunity to work with them a number of times. I worked with him when you know, he was changed to Razor Ramon also.
Yeah.
Did you ever work with Andre the Giant?
A number of times, of course,
wow.
Quite a few times. The only thing with Andre the Giant was he was with the WWE. You know, he never got to work in any other organizations or anything like that. I know there were an awful lot of bidding wars. I know the Crockett brothers from WCW at the time, David Crockett and Jim Crockett, were trying to pay anything to have him come into their territory for a little while and stuff. And even when they were doing that, the NWO series with the WCW with Hogan down there, and you know, they were trying to bring in Andre, but no, Vince had a lock on that.
Wow.
So, you know, he would work for Vince, you know, in different territory. He'd work for Vince, you know, up in Calgary and, you know, in Canada and in Japan and things like that, but it was always for Vince and the WWE.
Wow.
But Andre was a special person, you know. God, you know, Andre had he had all to say about his matches, you know, how who he was going to wrestle and how they were going to be done. It really wasn't too much, you know, the obvious thing, you know, with Andre is, you know, who the hell's going to beat him? There is nobody that could beat him. Before he got a little bit older and the sickness started, you know, to come in a little bit harder on him. But when he started and he was sharp as a tack, and he knew exactly how strong he was, and he was very strong, that, you know, if he didn't like you, he'd just bust
you
up
right off
the bat.
He let you know about it, right? He let you know about it.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
If he didn't like you, Andre, he let you know about it, right?
Right away, before the bell rang. Oh,
in,
yeah.
In 1987, he kind of passed the torch, if you will, to Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan thanks him every time he gets asked about that. There was some questionable things if he was going to job that night. What do you know about WrestleMania 3? Were you under WWE employment?
Yes.
At the time?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Joey Morella, a good friend of mine who passed away,
with
the referee actually for that bout, and you know, talking and everything.
Phil Monsoon, son.
Yeah, it's correct. And up until that bout, up until that match was in the ring,
right?
They didn't know how it would end. It was up to Andre, and then Andre gave Hogan the cue. Okay, you know, pick me up. I'll work with you. And he picked him up and, you know, put him, you know, and slammed him. But it wasn't until then. You know, beforehand, they didn't know how that was going to go.
To those
of us in the business watching it, and everybody was there watching it, you know, just to, you know, let's see. And it was entirely up to Andre. Vince led it up to Andre. He said, you know, let's see how it goes, you know, if it's going. And you know, of course, you watch the match. So both of them are going back and forth. Some guys has the advantage. Another guy has it. It went back and forth. And finally, it just came to the point. And Andre called it.
So there was a chance that Andre could have retained the title in Pontiac Silverdome.
Yes.
Right?
Sure.
Wow. Another great match that time. I was open 6 years old there. They took the head at the Garden next door and on the screen. I don't know if you're familiar with that or if you were there or what the story was. And even back then, the programs were $5. Now, that's expensive for now. But I remember vividly as a child watching that and getting the program for $5 in 87, you know, and I'm 5, 6 years old, and that was just, but it was just amazing to see Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus a Macho Man Randy Savage at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, yes, yeah, and people still talk about that match. Ricky Steamboat, again, a tremendous, tremendous athlete and a wrestler, and what a mind for the game and for the maneuvering and you know, doing everything and planning out the different techniques and styles and stuff. He's absolutely terrific, terrific.
Okay, let's go to a caller. Caller, you're on the air, 347.
Hello?
Yes, caller.
Yeah, you guys were talking about something earlier, which I've always been interested in doing. How do you get into promoting of wrestling?
Billy, why don't you take that one?
Get a lot of money. You got to have a lot of money. And you're going to start off with your first promotion, and then you're going to lose all that money. But you got to have the mindset.
If I wanted to promote somebody's card, how would I go about getting into it?
What do you mean promote somebody's card?
Meaning if you were having a wrestling card and you wanted people to promote it for you, that's what I would like to do.
Well, I don't promote mainly because I don't have the kind of money to do that. You really need money. You need money to bring in a talent that will draw the people. And then you have to go, then you have to pay for that talent. Then you have to pay for the promotion to get that people, you know, to run that. You got to pay for the flyers. You have to pay for the venue, the hall or the building, whichever you're going to do the show in. You have to pay rent on that. You have to get insurance on all the wrestlers and on the people. You have to get accident insurance. God forbid we try with the New York State Athletic Commission. I'm not saying that we're any better than any other state's commission, but I believe we are the only one that has some control over wrestling. And what we do is we try and make it as safe as possible between the wrestlers and the fans, that there is an insurance policy. Again, just for the sake that anything can happen. Accidents happen. Things happen on purpose without telling us, you know, until all of a sudden it's going to happen. But you got to have the money to do all that. And then, you know, that one show, if you want to, you know, proceed from that, you have to make that show lead into your next show, if you know what I'm talking about. Have it set up. Now, you can bring in your friends and stuff like that, you know, if they wrestle, if they're over 18 in the state of New York, bring them in, you know, let them wrestle, see what they can do and stuff, have them, you know, sell the tickets to their families and things like that. But, you know, then you're going to need somebody to, you know, you want to bring in the people, the money that you're going to lay out. Of course, obviously, you want to recuperate. So, you know, you just have to recoup the money I'm talking about. You will have to recuperate after your first show. No doubt about that. But it's not an easy thing, but it can be done. It can be done.
And how hard would it be getting a job with the WWE doing promotions?
They don't do anything. They don't lease anything out like they used to. Years ago, it was Vince McMahon Sr. that allowed his wrestlers. He lent out his wrestlers, or you know, he leased out his wrestlers to a lot of various promotions all around New York and New Jersey, Connecticut, and stuff, where the television show would promote them, and you know, and then you would see them on the different shows, you know, in your local shows. But Vince McMahon doesn't do that. Once he started taking away the territory and he controlled everything, he only sends his wrestlers to a main venue. You know,
Billy,
10 to 15,000.
Biggest name between these two. Yeah, you have to pick one. You're starting a promotion. I give you in one hat. You got Stone Cold Steve Austin. In the other hat, you got Hulk Hogan. Who are you taking? You got to pick one.
Hulk Hogan. See, I didn't hesitate. Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan is the biggest name for professional wrestling. Every single professional wrestler that's there today owes everything to Hulk Hogan. He's the man that brought personality He brought a different style. He started getting the people involved and stuff, being the first one to actually connect with the people. He was at the best one on the mic, the best guy doing interviews and stuff, all ad-libbing off the top of his head. He's absolutely the king of wrestlers, and bringing wrestling around as to what it is from his day to the present time.
Okay, JJ, why don't we pass it off to you?
I would have to agree with Billy. I mean, even in today's wrestling world, if you're going to say who's your biggest guy, if you could only get one, I would probably say Hulk Hogan. He's more known. He's been around the longest. He has one of the largest following of fans. I mean, the Hulkamaniacs, Hulkamania. It's been running wild, you know, since the 80s, and it's still going strong. Hogan, he's ventured out and doing other mainstream stuff. He had his own Hogan's Knows Best reality series with his family. He does guest spots on television shows, movies, everything. He's everywhere. He's so recognizable and bankable. I mean, he's in commercials. He did a commercial for I forgot what store or something. He's everywhere.
You buy the record or something. The record that he does it with Troy Aikman, and he does the commercial with Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman, a 3-time Super Bowl winner, quarterback. And people ask, who's that guy with Hulk Hogan? Holy cow. They know Hulk Hogan. They don't know Troy Aikman.
Yeah, how do you think, this is a little touchy subject, but you answer it how you want. How do you think Hulk Hogan dealt with his son with that accident?
I know how he felt. He felt absolutely horrible. He felt absolutely horrible.
Did he deal with it right? I mean, he got crucified a little bit by the media, by a comment that he said about the victim in response to his son, Nick. I believe Nick said something like, John had this coming, something along those lines.
What do they always say? You know, it was taken out of context and stuff like that. The kid, everybody was in shock, first of all, and everybody stayed in shock for at least a month after this. You know, nobody was approachable. Nobody, you know, they couldn't talk. Anything that came out of anybody's mouth was never thought clearly through and everything like that. And it was an accident. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the car, so I can't tell you it was his fault or what happened, anything like that. I know Hulk Hogan as the person I know has given a tremendous amount of money and support to the family of the victim. A lot of the medical bills have been paid by Hogan and stuff. So much so that pretty much Hogan has put himself in a little bit of a in desperate. You know, he's certainly not broke, but he spent an awful lot of money.
And speaking of Hogan, he will be at the convention this Sunday. You can go to legendoftheRing.com. Him and Ultimate Warrior, Rob Van Dam, Bret the Hitman Hart. We'll be there. There's a big convention. I know you like those conventions, right, Bill? Because you get to be close up with the wrestlers, right?
Sure, sure.
So go on. My buddy James is putting it on, WrestleCon.com. Whatever it is, you don't pass up an opportunity to meet the Babe Ruth of wrestling in Hulk Hogan. He is definitely the Babe Ruth.
He certainly is.
Okay, so another controversial subject, but you could take it the way you want. 2007, summer, Chris Benoit, when you first heard about the murder-suicide of the QuickBook crossface, when you first heard it, and then when you first found out what actually happened, and what was your response?
I was very saddened. I was, you're shocked, of course, anything in a major tragedy like that. Did we notice any real kinds of changes in him because of his drug usage or anything like that? No, you didn't. He did his job. He came to the shows and did his job and was fine, and then he went home or, we went on to the next show. He was always professional about that. This is when something went wrong at some time, in a short period of time. And that was the thing where he didn't show up for a show. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, something that he never did. Everybody was well aware, yeah, you take a little, you know, you take a little spot here, you know, somebody else does that also, you know, and, you know, you all know how bad it is to take it. We're not advocating it in any way, shape, or form. Drugs and alcohol are not good for you at any time. You can smoke if you like. I smoke cigars, but I'm not
what
an advocate,
kind?
You know, for that.
What
but
kind,
with,
Billy?
Huh?
What kind of cigars do you smoke?
Dominican Republic cigars. Cigars from the Dominican Republic.
But back to Benoit.
Yes. But the thing was, you know, you knew, you know, that, you know, what he was doing, but he didn't show up for the show. And that's what scared everybody when, you know, he was always professional enough to be there. And, you know, if he couldn't make it for whatever reason, you know, he would always call up. And that didn't happen, at, you know, very many times. I think maybe it only happened one time in his career. He never, you know, he didn't show up, but he called up and, you know, I can't make it, I'm stuck.
You knew Benoit, right?
Yes, I did.
And
I knew Nancy well. I knew Nancy from her old days when she was woman, when she was, well, actually going back even further, she was married to Kevin Sullivan. As I said, my very first bout was Kevin Sullivan.
But you knew Chris well enough to say that you wouldn't think this would happen in a million years, right?
No, never. Never. They were happy together. They had the son. They were happy with the son. You know, it was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, all the wrestlers said to a man that they would never, he's the last person, you know, Mr. Benoit, you know, that
well,
would
you know, and that's the polite way of saying, you know, he's the last person that you would think, you know, to do anything like this. You know, yes, of course, you know. You would never say, you know, here's the guy I always thought he'd do something like
you
that.
You know, this way. And, you know, we loved him as a wrestler, but, you know, WWE, they don't show him. They totally black him out as if he never existed. And he's not recognized in any of, like, the old, you know, like, reports. And, of course, he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame ever. Do you agree with that, or
we're talking about Benoit?
We're talking about Benoit. They basically,
yeah. Well, he was, you know, that's a black mark, you know, against him. You know, that business there. You know, like, well, yeah, okay. He died of drugs. He died of a drug overdose. He was taking drugs. He was on steroids. These are, you know, these
well,
are all
Eddie
things that
Guerrero
were never.
Eddie
these
Guerrero.
Were never proven. You know, so, but right away you're to blame. You know, and this and that. You know, in time, and time always comes out, you know, everything will come out, whether it was because of anything or any connections that he had with drugs and steroids and alcohol, you know, all that stuff. But in the meantime, now he's been, you know, they blame the WWE on it. So the best thing for them, for, you know, publicity-wise and insurance-wise and commercialism, is, you stay away from that, you know. You don't want to promote your bad sides, you know, and...
Okay, so you
with
the WWE, you're not acknowledging him.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Not bringing back bad memories, if you will.
No. Not so much bad memories, but giving yourself bad press.
You can't bring WWE. I mean, look at the NFL. What's his name? Killed himself.
That's a football player that just did it. Whatever his name was, yeah.
Yeah, the football player just took his own life, and similar, took his wife on the Kansas City. So I don't blame Vince McMahon one bit.
No. In this case, the best thing is stay away from it. You know. Yeah, it's a shame, but you know, it's something that had to be done. Yeah.
No question, and. Yeah, so we are just days away from WrestleMania. The last WrestleMania you did was 10, right?
Yes.
And that was Bret Hart and Owen Hart. Yes, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, and Bret Hart and Luger. Do you remember which match you did?
I did the opening bout. I did the show because I would not sign a release. If I signed a release, which meant I wouldn't get paid, I would be in the video, okay, and be promoted as being on the video. And I didn't want that. I've been on enough videos, and I've been on television, and I had a name for myself, and I had to think of my family. My kids growing up. My kids were going to school. I had to pay for all that. Excuse me. So as much as I, you know, I loved what I did. I absolutely adored it. I still adore wrestling and being a great, you know, being a part of it. And luckily, I've made a little reputation and a little name for myself. I didn't have to promote myself to the extent of saying, okay, you know, I did WrestleMania and let it go with that. Well, this way I worked the show and I got paid for it. And I got paid pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the same instance with WrestleMania 1. The same thing.
So where will you be coming up at the TNA? You said you're going to be with TNA. TNA
well,
too?
I'm the inspector. I'm going to be the inspector for the TNA
where?
Show on Friday, on next Friday night. What is that? April the 6th, I think, or something like that.
And where is that?
That's at the Westbury, the Music Fair. I think it's some kind of a bank name now, but it was always the Westbury Music Fair in Westbury, Long Island.
Oh, okay. So they're being in the tri-state area. I didn't see that.
Yeah, yeah. And again, they're doing. It's a very big show, and again, they're trying to, you know, whatever they can, draw people from WrestleMania. You know, they're there on Friday night. WrestleMania starts their stuff on, you know, the they're going to have the induction into the Hall of Fame, as you talked about. That will be on Saturday. And then Sunday is the big WrestleMania at the Meadowlands. The induction will be at Madison Square Garden. And so Friday night, they're hoping to get, you know, maybe a few of the fans or split the fans or do whatever they can. Again, you got to, you know, this is a business. It's a money-making business. It's a big money-making business, and you do the best you can. Now's a good time that the TNA people, Impact Wrestling, whichever way you want to call it now, they got me confused as to what their name is.
How
they want to go and when they want to go. So they're loading up this show. They have Hulk Hogan. It's the first time Hulk Hogan's appearing in the wrestling ring in this area in a number of years. And he'll be there, and Sting will be there, and all their champion, Bubba Ray, is the new champion now. And he'll be teaming up with his brother, Devon, for the first time that they haven't been tag team, I think, in 4 years now since they broke up on the TNA show. Now they'll be back together.
Yeah.
And, it's a different show. It's a loaded show.
What would you give advice to a wrestler somebody's listening to the program that wants to become a wrestler? What would you tell them?
A wrestler that's wrestling now or wants to be a wrestler?
Both. You know, somebody that has aspirations of working for the WWE. Tell them the good, bad, and the ugly.
Well, the best thing is always listen to the old-timers. Listen to the guys that have been in the business and stuff. You know, they'll tell you, you know, exactly what to do. If you're lucky enough to become a name wrestler and you're lucky enough to try and get some money, you know, out of it and stuff, there's a good pay night and things like that, good contract and everything, and get somebody to handle your money for you and make sure it's a reputable person, obviously, you know. You don't want somebody taking your money, you know. Look, talk to Dionne Warwick and a couple other people, like, you know, that are in the news now that made millions, and where is it, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, if you want to become...
Dionne Warwick
is interested in the rest of
million.
What's that?
Dionne Warwick, the great one, is in debt for $70 million.
Yeah. That's a shame. Yeah. But, again, you know, people controlling your money and doing that, you have to have faith in them. You have to have some kind of faith in them. But, obviously, well, you know, now we're getting off the subject a little bit. You know, if you know you're starting to lose that money a little bit, you know, why hang on to that guy or do something definitely to change that? Don't think it's, don't think I'm going to get it back for you. Oh, yeah, I'll help you. It'll cost you a little bit more for me to help you. Don't worry. Yeah.
And,
but, you know, you got to look at it logically and common sense.
And then in terms of a wrestling school, would you recommend any? Johnny
Rods? Johnny Rods. Yeah. Johnny Rods is good. The Samoans are very good. The WWE has a couple, you know, if you get into their program, they have different groups. You have Shawn Michaels runs a wrestling school in Texas. You have Dusty Rhodes runs the wrestling school down south in Florida, in the Florida area. But locally, you know, for kids, you know, that are interested in it, Johnny Rods or the Samoans, things like that, you know. But,
No.
You know, it's not, you know, they don't make you a star. That's going to become your own personality and how you go, you know, in the next step.
90% of it is your charisma. they say, right?
Well, you know, again, you'll know a good trainer and the wrestling schools will notice what you have, you know, and don't go in and say, well, I want to be a wrestler and I want to be the bad guy, you know. No, let them work with what you got and stuff. You know, of course, you walk in and if your nose is pierced and your ears are pierced and you got earrings and stuff all through over your face, you know, okay, yeah, the chances are that you're going to be a baby face, you know, if you look the part. But, you know, they can work that out and stuff. But as far as basic knowledge of the wrestling and you know, not so much the business, but learning the basic wrestling holds and how to fall and you know, and develop a personality and develop a stance and a style of your own, they help you out. And that, Johnny Rods and the Samoans are the best ones for that. That's my opinion.
Okay, let's have one final question from my co-host, JJ. JJ wants to hand a question for Bill Lee before we head on out of here.
Like you mentioned TNA and you mentioned WWE. Do you see TNA, you know, establishing themselves more, or do you think they're doing a good job where they are now? Do you see them growing at all?
Oh, they're growing. They're definitely growing from what they started out, and they're growing. Yes, they're on now a much more popular market. They're on a much more popular television station. I think they're on Spike TV now and something, and you know, which is more popular. And you know, and again, it's more popular in some areas than WWE, but WWE is worldwide. TNA has been doing a couple of shows overseas, but nowhere, you know, as the broad specter that WWE does. You know, when they go overseas, they're in Germany and Austria and Czechoslovakia and England and, you know, all of that. You know, they go overseas and they do a week here or 2 weeks, you know, in the same spot. And they film their shows for there. But they're coming along. You know, their talent is good. They're working with good kids and stuff. They're renovating. They're having, you know, they're coming out with different ideas. You know, unfortunately, some of the ideas are almost exactly copying some of the stuff WWE has done, you know, in the past and everything. But now, you know, and now it's coming back again. WWE is bringing out, what do they call it, the Shield now, when before they had the X-Men or something, you know, before that. So, you know, with Brad, what's his name, Wade Barrett, that group, and now, you know, now you have the Shield, and now you have the Aces and Eights with the TNA. So, you know, it's following, it's leading, it's changing, you know, they're doing that. Will it ever be as big as WWE? No, I don't see that. Okay. But I think there's, you know, but I know there's room for them. There's enough market for both of them.
I agree.
This is their, 2002 summer they started. So this is 11 years for them.
My anniversary will be their 11th year.
That's right. And they started with a bunch of people.
ECW didn't make it that long.
You know, yeah. They started with a bunch of people again. First thing, you know, like, well, who the heck are these guys? You know, and all of a sudden, you know, now you have an AJ Styles, which is a household name. You know, he's terrific. You have Jeff Hardy. Hopefully, he's gone. You know, he's gotten rid of a lot of his problems. He's been there with them now. The Dudleys are fantastic. You know, they come with a reputation, and they haven't changed. They haven't changed one bit. It's the exact same style that they used for years. It's an open market. They're giving it their best shot.
No question. Just one last thing. The ECW, give me your memories of that.
Well, the original, you know, of course, Paul Heyman started that, you know. Paul Heyman who now, you know, works for WWE. And, you know, that was a phenomenal thing. Again, because it was a whole different style of wrestling. It was more, you know, like the WWE, you know, they used to have the special main event that a no holds barred or no disqualification or something like that, you know, anything goes, a ladder match. Well, the ECW, every match was that, and that's why they called them Extreme. Every match was like anything goes. There really was very little rules, very little thing that they conformed to. They got away with doing everything, a lot of high-flying aerial people, Rob Van Dam, you know, when they first started doing that. And you had Taz doing his suplexes and stuff that nobody saw, front suplexes, back suplexes, you know, and fast, going boom, 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 like rapid fire, you know, doing that. Something that, you know, was completely different than the wrestlers of the old days right before that, where you would get a hold and you try and make the guy submit. There was no submission in ECW. You just beat the guy up.
Were you ever at the Elks Lodge?
Certainly. I did them. I did the Elks Lodge. I did Philadelphia for them. I did a tour with them when they went down south, and they were booed because the traditional wrestlers and stuff, you know, were used to seeing a wrestling show with the holds, back and forth, doing the holds and this and that, pinfall. And they went down there, and everybody was just booed out of the place. They didn't like it at all. They paid their money. They did it. Everybody got paid. But, you know, they didn't go back. There was a lot of areas down south that didn't want them.
Wow.
Well, Bill, you know, the time's up, and I just want to thank you a million for joining us. You are one in a million. You're a kind man for doing the interviews. We go back with the hotlines for years, and it's just a pleasure to have you on your Class Act.
Well, King, I want to thank you very much for your time and your hospitality and, of course, your personal friendship. I enjoy it. Feel free to get in touch with me at any time. JJ, it's a pleasure talking with you. Hopefully we'll all get together soon.
Yeah, thank you for answering my questions and everything. It was great to pick your mind on wrestling.
Anytime. Okay. Thank you all.
Okay. Thanks for joining us, guys, and we will see you tomorrow. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Your show's not long enough.